Hello, everyone. I gotta say, I am truly, truly humbled and shocked at the response to my request for donations. And I'm not going to give you a huge speech. I just want to say that really, truly, I'm thankful. And really, you know, I didn't know that it was going to be this much of a success. Rest assured that you guys are going to get your money's worth for what you've contributed. But right now, I just want to make a real quick video. And this is not going to be indicative of the type of videos that I'm going to be posting in the future. I'm going to try to get back to kind of theoretical, groundbreaking, research-based material. But for now,
I want to talk about recent attempts in the manosphere to portray marriage as merely being some mitigable risk that's perfectly okay to sign into so long as, you know what to look for or you pick the right woman or some other such bullshit. That men would even fix their mouths to defend Western marriage. Men in the manosphere, this late in the game, that they would honestly fix their mouth to bleed out this disingenuous, poisonous flatulence they're passing off as advice is quite frankly indicative of a deep-seated need to uphold a system and an institution that is inherently gynocentric. And when I say gynocentric, I mean exactly that. It is a gynocracy to match and rival the capital F feminist gynocracy. The institution of Western marriage is designed first and foremost to benefit women and to prioritize the welfare of women above all other things. It is by its very definition a form of welfare. You see, the only good thing that can be said about its comparison to feminist female welfare imperatives is that at the very least, men are entering into these legally binding positions of welfare dispensers voluntarily, at least initially they are. But what we're dealing with here is a symbiotic relationship, a relationship of organically mediated cooperation between what we can identify as traditional marriage and the feminist obsession with extending the welfare net via government force past the realms of wedlock, going into and continuing after divorce. And this highlights the interconnectedness of larger gynocentrism's ability to permeate an entire culture and manifest itself in various different spheres of human endeavor, so as to appear, as any effective self-propelling process does, to derive its energy and inertia from what propels it, or the motion of its propulsion, as opposed to what's actually powering it. Take a primitive tribesman from anywhere in the world who's never seen an airplane. Now, if you ask him, tribesman, what makes this device taxi across a runway? And what do you think puts it in the air? Now, having no understanding of the internal combustion engine that powers the plane, and having no knowledge of the controlled explosion of hydrocarbons occurring within that engine, he will, of course, point to the propeller and say, the propeller moves this plane. Now, feminism is the propeller, and traditionalism the aileron of the plane. They facilitate movement of the plane. They make flight more facile. But the engine powers the whole process. Steam and water don't provide nuclear power. Nuclear fission does. Gynocentrism is the engine, gentlemen. Sear that into your brains. Once you understand this, the next question we inevitably ask is, what is the fuel supply? What does this engine run off of? Well, it runs off of us, gentlemen. Men are the fuel, women are the fuel, and we are as unconscious of this as burning propane is to its own consumption. You see, we enforce gynocentrism automatically. This is what I mean when I say that gynocentrism is a completely organic process that the psychologies and biologies of both the human male and female tend toward. Now, if you've ever found yourself getting into your car after a long day's work, your mind essentially shut off from 10 or 12 hours of workplace drudgery. You get into your car, you put it in drive, you wait patiently at the lights, you make your way home, you check your planner or your reminders on your smartphone, and you discover that you absolutely had to make it to the DMV that day, and now it's closed. What happened? Well, your mind defaulted to going straight home. You weren't even conscious of it. That's what gynocentrism is. It's not unjust laws. It's not some monolithic descendant of gynocentrism we've identified as feminism. It is, in fact, defaultive, if that's even a word. But yes, defaultive unconscious human behavior, the precursor from which feminism, the legal oppression that it leveled against men, and oppressive traditional male gender roles derive from. And you see, all, or at the very least, most organic processes are mitigated or canceled out only by other organic processes. Now, even what is upon first glance what appears to be a screaming testament of man fighting against nature, fighting against the organic. Let's take a dam, for example, holding back millions of gallons of water from going where it naturally wants to go. It only does so because the engineers that built it spent years designing and implementing what can only be defined as a careful exploitation of an organic process, i.e. the laws of physics. Traditionalism, despite its recent technologically induced devolution, only succeeded for so long because it directed the energies of the gynocentric engine propelling human behavior in a certain direction. That direction being the opening up of the sexual and reproductive commodity inherent to women to a larger pool of men previously unsuitable for mating privileges, unsuitable at least according to women. And we have a sprawling, technologically advanced modern civilization to thank for that. But even still, this observation begs the question, or rather crystallizes the realization that at one point, men, all those millennia ago, had to look at what was the current gender dynamic preceding traditionalism.
Men had to look at what was unfolding in front of them on the African savanna or wherever this was going on and say to themselves, now, this may be the way nature intended it to be, this violent orgy of men killing each other and women sitting back prostrate, watching and waiting and selecting sexually for the winners of the whole bloody ordeal. But it took men back then realizing that what is, quote, natural isn't always ideal. And they then set out to create a system by which organic forces, the male reproductive drive, the female need to consume male resources, they took organic forces and harnessed them in a way that combated another organic force, the reproductive default that revolves around a process of a perpetual rutting season for the human male, which is the preferred hypergamous unconscious breeding setup that arises when women have complete control over reproduction. Need proof? Well, look at any modern ghetto where fatherlessness is rampant, and what do you see? You see an entropic, violent male-versus-male competition for females. That, gentlemen, is the type of reproductive arrangement that women overwhelmingly prefer, which is exactly why men should seek as much control over reproduction as they can possibly attain without, of course, depriving women of any fundamental human rights. And this is up to and including developing and inventing new means of human reproduction, which, by the way, is the destiny of any sentient, intelligent creature. You see, if the purpose of all organisms is to reproduce, it is a certainty that intelligent organisms will devise as many means of reproduction as their intellect allows them. So it should be noted that my opposition to traditionalism derives not from any so-called agenda to disrupt efficient human reproductive behavior, but in fact out of a desire to point out that this iteration of the exploitation of the gynocentric engine that drives society has lost its efficacy. Traditionalism should be lauded, in fact, as the first major male-inspired innovation towards his species' method of reproduction. It should be lauded as a milestone of male ingenuity and invention, which did in fact start out as an attempt to curb and harness gynocentrism. It was the Model T of its kind that stands as a herald of things to come, but can no longer compete with the 12-cylinder Lamborghini engine block that men are tasked with assembling and inventing now that traditionalism can no longer maintain its checks on female sexual power. There are leaks in the engine of traditionalism, and we've lost a critical amount of efficiency. The cause of the leak derives from traditionalism's dependency on the behavior of females, specifically the shaming of female sexuality and the implementation of taboos on female sexuality in order to keep their sexual power at bay. Men going their own way innovation does away with this approach altogether and seeks to change male minds only, persuading men in a way that maximizes their effect, i.e. educating them about female nature as well as their own biological predilections, while simultaneously minimizing their energy debt, i.e. keep your money in your pocket and reject this leave it to beaver traditionalist provider bullshit. That's right, women. Men go in their own way, as antagonistic as you view us, and for all of your claims of misogyny, we place zero, count them, zero constraints on your sexuality whatsoever. None. You can be a virgin, or you can sleep with 1,000 men if you want to. Because you see, you're dealing with a breed of man, a new breed of man, that isn't some sexually repressed little boy, wetting himself every time we picture some woman we're involved with having fucked somebody else before us. We truly take you off the pedestal. We tell you, do what you wish, but prepare for a war of siege and attrition if you try and control us or steal our wealth in any way. We're tired of carrying you, whether the load is hoisted on our backs through outdated cultural norms or forced onto us via the halls of Congress. No, now you're free to do as you please. And the only thing men going their own way are going to attempt to force on you, women, are the natural consequences of your actions that everyone else has shielded you from. And if it turns out, as I suspect it will, that once the forces of cause and effect are forced onto you, if it turns out you'll be begging for your sexual taboos and for your supposedly demeaning role as helpmeets back, then society will see, for once, in an undeniable fashion, just who has been oppressing who. Speaking of Congress, you know, I find it interesting. Why is the budgetary political wing of the most powerful country in the Western world named after the Sex Act? Why is it that the prefix matri, meaning mother or maternity, along with the suffix moni, meaning status, combine to form the very definition of the word marriage? You see, you can pretty up this exploitative criminal contract of misandry all you want, ladies and manginas, but the language, always in the syntax, and the language, the unconscious truth makes itself apparent. Matrimony, indeed, it translates directly to mother status. Notice, men, that you aren't even mentioned. That's not by accident, gentlemen, and it's not even on purpose. It's so inherent to us as human beings that it's embedded in the very language. And all this, my friends, eventually brings us to the critical G. The critical G and his rebranded, sneaky little Nawalt euphemisms. A YouTuber named Razorblade Candy recently uploaded a spectacularly thorough but admittedly long-winded refutation of his arguments. And so I'll try to be as brief as possible and only address a few key points that the Critical G has made because, quite frankly, him and his ilk's efforts to lead men back onto the plantation aren't worth any extensive period of my time. But Razorblade Candy, and I'm going to put that video in the description box because it's really good, he caught what I did as well when I forced myself to sit through those videos. What he did first was to reference Critical G's claim that it was feminists. That's right, a handful of obese, affluent women that conned poor, unsuspecting womankind into embracing feminism. That's right, a handful of feminist women did it. Nothing to do with the unconscious, gynocentric engine that drives society, but a couple hundred of American and British women, they're the ones responsible for this mess. Right. You see, it doesn't even matter that Critical G as an individual was saying this. There are millions of Critical G's out there. He's just another gear in the machine, another male defender of the female-centric society we find ourselves in. The important point is that his blatant, willful ignorance of the massive, damn near synonymous role women play with politicized feminism is, somewhere in his head, an attempt at defending the individuality of the female human being. When, by definition, a true female individualist who purports to assess the unadulterated truth will clearly come to this conclusion, if she's being honest with herself, that women play an integral role in the propagation of feminism, that women feed it and sustain it and have no moral qualms about it, and that feminism is merely an up-to-date iteration of misandry and gynocentrism. And I, as an individual man, look around me, and I see the male judges, the white knights, the traditionalist rationalizers like Critical G pulling their mental gymnastics, and I clearly have to admit, as an individual, that men are contributing to it as well. And to say that it was feminists, single-handedly manipulating this gargantuan population of men and women that make up the West to fall in line and adopt these gynocentric behaviors so seamlessly and thoroughly, it's just ridiculous and it spits in the face of the individualist observer, both male and female, and encourages him or her to swallow a completely delusional implication that an individual female's exceptionalism somehow negates a crystal clear manifestation of female demographics. In actuality, instead of defending female individuality, he deludes it and insults it, and like his kind usually does, he seeks to suppress any attempts to tell womankind to get their collective shit together and graduate from childhood because exceptions to the rules may exist. And then he gives us this bullshit about mitigating the risk of marriage. You know, just make sure, guys, that you picked the right girl to enter into this criminal, philosophically illegal contract. You know, just make the right decisions when picking wifey, and then, then this contract you signed that is explicitly predatory against men shouldn't come back to bite you in the ass in 1 or 2 or 10 years down the road. I mean, you can't make this shit up. I mean, here's a direct quote from his blog. He says in bullet points, quote, no divorce was preceded by a happy marriage. Quote, divorce from a decent woman with whom it doesn't work out probably isn't that much to fear. Quote, divorce from a sociopath is very dangerous. Now, this, you see, is why men who defend this criminal contract of marriage pose a direct threat to male freedom and sovereignty, because they frame marriage, a contract that can have you legally enslaved, as some acceptable risk to be encouraged, as though any benefit can be garnered that could possibly balance out your potential legal enslavement upon divorce. And to say that no divorce was preceded by a happy marriage just displays a downright egregious, willful ignorance of the facts at hand. Are you aware, Critical G, that human attraction consists of an intense initial phase of courtship where both men and women, but men in particular, are prone towards overlooking massive red flags that would indicate problems down the road if they sign into a legal binding contract before this courtship phase abates? Are you aware that consequences for letting that courtship phase cloud your judgment are only leveraged against men inside a marriage contract? Are you aware that women are on their best behavior during this courtship phase? Are you aware that when you state that one need only differentiate between decent women and sociopaths, that sociopaths, by virtue of their need to not be exposed as such, are extremely adept at concealing their sociopathic nature? Are you aware that serial killers like Ted Bundy depended on the very ability to camouflage as one of these decents, as you call them, and lured women after women to their demise by appearing normal and non-threatening and not like the sociopath he was? You see, no, you'd rather men roll the dice and enter into these criminal contracts and just, you know, what? What, Critical G? Let their gut feelings discern the art of sociopath dowsing for them? Tell you what, Critical G, you go get married. You go enter into a criminal contract that allows for your destruction based on a woman's whims. And if you find yourself on the wrong end of a family court judge's desk, tell him that you screened her through your little sociopath test, and let us know if you get to avoid alimony and child support because your armchair psychology turned out to be wrong. Until then, Critical G, don't worry about what men going their own way say or do. And go back to talking about how evil Muslim men are, or whatever it is you do on your little channel. And that's all I got to say about that. Now, very soon, within the next couple of days, I'm going to be posting my ideas on how we can move forward from here and try to create a information repository. Well, I'll tell you all about it very soon. Thanks for listening.